Welcome back to Brain Body Movement, the podcast for those interested in everything nutrition, training, and mindset. I'm one of your hosts, Brad, and I'll be joined by my co-host, Brock. Today's episode was a Q&A where we answered four questions that got sent to us through social media. Question number one, do you have any pet peeves when training clients? Question number two, what are your thoughts on following a meal plan versus tracking macros? Question number three, when is it safe for my young children to start lifting? And question number four, how important is it knowing my BMI? That was in the back half of the show, and in the front half, we discussed the importance of taking action, my sobriety, changing your identity, and gave you the standard couple of random facts. All right, enjoy the show. It is much easier to change how you think by changing your behavior than it is to change your behavior by changing how you think. Act out the change you seek. There's obviously caveats to everything.
I think that does hold a fair bit of validity though. I think, because what's the expression? Your feelings become your thoughts become your actions become you. So if you were to reverse engineer that, like act, thought, feel. So act out. Take action on who you want to become, and then your thoughts will probably start to align with that of like, this is the person that I want to be. Let's say it's health and fitness, going to the gym, and you keep reminding yourself, I'm a person that goes to the gym, I'm a person that goes to the gym. Just go to the gym and build that body of evidence that you are a person that goes to the gym. So your actions will allow you to think and genuinely believe that that's who you are. I'm someone that eats healthy. I'm someone that eats healthy. No. Just eat healthy, and then you'll have a body of evidence to support that you are someone that eats healthy, and it'd be much easier to believe that. Is
Yeah,
that the way
because
you interpret it as well?
yeah, like there's obviously caveats because some people are like just at least thinking that they can go to the gym will get them to the gym. But like for the most part, I think it's pretty good advice because if you say like, you know, oh yeah, I've stopped drinking or whatever, or yeah, I'm a healthy person, or yeah, I go to the gym and stuff. But yeah, unless you're actually doing those acts, you are kind of lying to yourself. And I don't see a lot of people that go to the gym all the time post on Facebook that they're going to the gym. Like, you know, those posts on Facebook that you used to do, like, oh, I'm at the
Used to
gym.
check in.
Yeah, check in at the gym and stuff. Like, people that are going all the time don't usually do that. They might upload stuff that they're at the gym, but that's more for them, I guess, or showing things for other people. But if you are seeking to change something, I think some people, they may say, you know, I want to change this. And then they think that it's changed now because they've said it. So they're like, oh yeah, I'm definitely like going to stop that or whatever. And it gives them a dopamine hit because they're like, yeah, I'm making moves, I'm making plans. Like this is what's going to happen. And then like say for alcohol, like I'm going to quit alcohol or whatever. Like after they have a big bender. And then the next week rolls around and they feel good. They're fueled up, they're not hungover anymore, and sun's out. They're like, and the boys want to go out for a drink, they're onto it. Or the girls want some cocktails, they're onto it. And what they said last week was in a different situation. Whereas if you just don't do that, then you will change a lot more than saying that you'll be doing all these things because then you have a, I wouldn't say guilt, but it's more like there's something like not anxious or I don't know, just a feeling of like, well, my actions aren't showing what I'm saying. And you feel shit because you're like, oh, like they're not aligning up with what I say, which is true to myself, unless you're like delusional and you actually believe you're doing those things when you're really not.
Well, what's a, I'm going to butcher this quote. Thinking about doing the thing isn't doing the thing. Saying you're going to do the thing isn't doing the thing. Talking about doing the thing isn't doing the thing. The only thing that's doing the thing is doing the thing.
Say your boy Chris Williamson, mate.
Yeah, of course it is, mate. but it's true. Like people will talk, say, preach. And it's a big one for me. Like it's a something that I won't go out on a limb and say I'm going to do something unless I'm actually going to follow through on that word and do with it. And it's a big principle that I will hold a lot of people close in my life to. If they say they're going to do something, I will check in on them and be like, "Hey, did you do that thing?
Mm-hmm.
Did you do it, or was it just something that you said off the cuff to me?" And then they've got the chance to either be like, "Oh, it's just something I said off the cuff," or like, no, it's something I want to do." Well, then you best believe I'm going to be checking in on you again, because it's a big thing. With me starting this marathon, so there was a lady in the gym that was like, this is months ago. She was like, "Oh, I heard you're preparing for a marathon. Are you enjoying it?" I went, "Absolutely not." And she goes, "Oh, really?" She goes, "You know, you don't have to do it." And I went, "Oh, but that's where you're so very wrong." I said, I have to do it. I said, "This is something that I said I'm going to do, and I'm a man of my word. And what is a man if he's not for his word?" I've always held that. Like, if someone says they're going to do something, or if someone says something, then I'd like them to abide by what they're saying. So if someone's actions don't align with their words, it's something that I probably need to get better at, and not holding people to the same standard that I hold myself in that regard, because I do hold others to that sort of standard or level. But yeah, if you say you're going to do something and follow through on it for many reasons, it's not just necessarily for other people, but like for yourself. That's the main point. Like, I am going to start going to the gym 2 times a week, and I'm going to start eating a predominantly whole food diet. Right. Follow through on that. Don't just say you're going to do something, and because that could bleed into other areas of your life, and you don't want that. That's the last thing you want, for you to be like, "Oh yeah, I'm going to do this," or, "I'm going to wake up in the morning," or, "I'm going to stop snoozing my alarm." Like, little things like that. Like, Nettie Brockman talks about this. So he said he made a commitment to himself that he's never going to have a takeaway coffee cup ever again in his life. He's like, "And I
Really?
will go out with friends." Yeah, I'll go out with friends, and we'll be like, "Yep, let's get a takeaway coffee and go for a walk." And he's like, "No, nah, I won't get a coffee." And they're like, "Why not?" He's like, I promised myself that I would never get a takeaway coffee cup again." He's like, "And I'm not going to break that promise to myself." So now he will only sit down and have it out of a mug, or he will have to take his own keep cup with him. He's like, "It's something I won't do." Another one is towels. He's like, I must always hang my towel up on the floor. I was noticing it was a bad habit of I'd finish with my towel and I'd drop it wherever I left it. And like, so I made it a non-negotiable myself of, I'm always going to hang my towel up after I'm finished using it. He's like, "And you best believe when I'm in a hotel, whether I was running across Australia, no matter what I was doing, I hung my towel up because I'm a man that keeps a word and promise commitment to myself."
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's very interesting. And I think if you're looking at your life and you're trying to, clean a few things up, I think it's just starting with some small things of making promises to yourself, or at least saying that you're going to do certain things and doing those actions. And then you can build upon that of like, no, so tomorrow I'm just going to go for like a 5 minute walk. And then you do it. And then now you're building up the confidence of like, oh, maybe I can go for a 10 minute walk. And now you're a person of your word, saying that you are doing the things that you say you're doing. So then when you do say something, there'll be something in you that's like, oh, well, I don't want to break this now that I am a man of my word or a woman of my word. And then you can use that to your advantage in getting what you want in health, wealth, relationships, or whatever. It's very powerful, because I think a lot of people just say things that they don't mean. Because when it comes down to it, it's just, I don't think they've truly committed to themselves, and they've just said it off the cuff, whether to themselves or to other people, just because they're in the moment. Like, yeah, I'm going to wake up earlier. And then as soon as that alarm goes off, because you didn't go to bed when you wanted to, and then you start making excuses like, oh, I went to bed last night. It's probably better that I get the 8 hours sleep instead of making a commitment to myself that I was actually going to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. But it's like, well, maybe get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and that is actually a lesson to you to go to bed earlier. So that, because then you won't learn that lesson. You're going to just keep making excuses why you're going to bed late all the time. Whereas if you actually wake up at 5 a.m., then at night you will be a lot more tired, and then your melatonin will then release earlier on in the night, and then you'll want to go to bed, and it'll be a lot easier instead of staying up later at night. So sometimes you just have to bite the bullet with certain things like that, when you said you got to do certain things, even though at the time it's going to be really hard.
I think where a lot of people go wrong, though, is they set themselves unrealistic expectations. It's like they try and change too much at once, or they try and make too big of a leap at once. And that's what I like that you mentioned there, the 5 minute walk. Like that's just such a low-hanging fruit, like 5 minute walk at, after dinner or after lunch, before breakfast, whenever it is. It's so simple. It's such an easy thing to do. Or I'm going to drink one glass of water with each meal. It's very, very simple to start with. And that's where you build that confidence and self-discipline in yourself. The people that I find that feeling defeated and they can't stick to a plan, you're trying to reinvent the wheel and change too much all at once. Like start small, build confidence, accumulate some wins, and then take a bigger leap. Like people go, it would be much better going from A, B, C, D, E, F rather than going A, D, G. Like they're huge leaps. You're missing B and C, where you'll probably learn some lessons about yourself along the way as well. So I think that's where majority of people not following through on actions when they say they're going to make a change comes from, because they just view it as, oh, well, I've got to make this whole lifestyle change and I've got to do this all at once. Pump your brakes, 5 minute walk, eat a piece of fruit a day, start there. It's relatively simple, but that's the way you build that self-confidence and trust with in yourself, or create a plan and make it a plan that you know that you can just look at it and go tick, 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 but don't have too many things on there. Just be like, yep, I can do that, that, and that today, and I can continue to do that every day and just tick boxes. Essentially, that's what achieving a goal or making a change is like, right? You've got where you want to be, you've got where you are, and then you reverse engineer from where you want to be back to where you are, and how do I get there? And then you go, okay, I need to make this change, this change, this change. And then you just tick the boxes along the way. Essentially, that's what I'm doing with this marathon. I know 35 runs, 12 weeks, tick box. Okay, one long pace run done. Okay, one tempo run done. I'm just ticking boxes going along the way. And that's how I will achieve the goal that I've set out to do.
Yeah,
Sounds simple though.
it is, yeah, it well, I mean, it is simple, just not easy. Because the thing is, like, people have these massive goals, but then they're like, well, I don't know how to get there. But it is breaking it down into smaller steps from like that yearly to the 6 monthly to the 3 monthly, monthly, weekly, daily, and then your day to day, what are you actually going to do to move you forward? And that could be just that 5 minute walk, that could be just the nice meal that you have that's healthy, could be just going to the gym. All these actions will then lead to the end result that you're ultimately looking for. But it's not like you're not going through the day and going, did I reach my goal or not? It's, did I do the actions that will reach me closer towards that goal? And then if you look at it from that lens, then you're like, okay, well, that's a lot easier instead of just constantly waiting for that perfect number or that perfect body or that perfect amount in the bank. Like these things might come, but if you just focus on the inputs instead of the outcome when it comes to things like this. And with your marathon running as well, like that's a good structure to have of like if you have these certain runs that you got to do to reach this long goal. It's like imagine if you just didn't do any of that and just like, oh, I'm going to run a marathon, mate, you'd be wrecked. You could probably do it, but like, mate, it would be fucking brutal. So yeah, breaking it down into little spots, and if you're getting overwhelmed, you need to define like where you actually want to go first, and then you can break it down into the smaller parts of like what can you actually achieve today. Like you can't do, 10 workouts in a day. I mean, you probably could, but like, you wouldn't be sustainable. Like, you'd be wrecked. Like, and you couldn't eat in a, 30,000 calorie deficit. Like, it's just impossible. Like, so pick smaller actions to move you closer towards your goal instead of looking at the massive picture. It's good to have that picture there. But then day to day, then you feel like you've accomplished something instead of going like, I haven't reached my goal yet. This is shit. I hate doing this. Because then when the times are tough, you go, no, like I've come from this point here. I've reached this far by just doing these kind of inputs. I've made some progress. And look for progress everywhere, because there's a lot of progress in all sorts of things. And then you're like, okay, well, what am I doing now? Is it moving me closer or is it moving further away from my goal? Because I think a lot of people, when they get stuck or they get stressed and they just want to give up, I think just taking it back to, okay, well, this is the goal right now. So maybe some things aren't working for me because they're not sustainable. Maybe I just need to like go back to the basics and go, all right, what's the actual goal and what are my inputs that I'm going to do right now to reach me towards my goal?
And this applies to any goal, right? I know we speak through a health and fitness lens, but this applies to any goal. And another thing I feel, or like a gut instinct or believe, is that people just don't take the time to do that, clearly define their goal, clearly define where they want to be, and then reverse engineer. And that's where hiring someone can come in handy, right? Hiring a personal trainer, hiring a fitness coach, hiring a business coach, hiring a financial advisor, that's where they do that for you, so you don't have to sit down, because you might find it arduous. You might find it tedious, boring, not your cup of tea. Well, focus on the things that you can, and then that is would be the plan that is provided for you by the person that's done the thing that you don't like doing. Anyway, let's take a left turn. I want to ask you some personal questions.
Oh, okay.
How's the back?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's the old back. So, for people that don't know, I may have done a 160 kg deadlift, and the next couple of days, slash 5 days, maybe, it was hurting a bit. So, I had to ease off a bit. And it's come good. And the thing was, I've hurt my back once before. Can't remember what I was doing, but I did, the McGill Big Three, which helped a lot. Well, I thought they helped. Did some mobility, did, just light exercises to help with the back. This time, when I hurt my back, I didn't do anything. I was like, I'm gonna see if I just do nothing. Obviously, like walking and stuff, but I didn't do any stretching. Maybe one little bit of like pigeon or whatever I think I did. Or cat cow or something like that, bird dog, whatever it was. And then I'm like, I can't remember
Just
which one that is.
just naming animals, man. Pigeon, cat, cow, bear, dog.
That's it. All the shit. And then I was like, no, I'm not gonna do anything, because I know that most back exercise, like whenever I've had like back injuries, usually within like a couple of weeks they come good. And it came good within like, yeah, like 6 days without doing anything. Now, I'm not saying that if people are out there and they've hurt their back, to not do anything. Obviously, sometimes doing something just makes it feel better, so they think that something's happening, and then from there it helps. But I just wanted to test on myself to see, like, if I just did nothing, would it get better? And it did, which means it was like just a strain from that heavy weight that I'm not used to. I kind of jumped up 20 kilos when I shouldn't have. So.
20 kilos is a huge jump. A classic example of better coaches to others than we are to ourselves, right? Like classic example.
I've got, I'm like 200. Yeah, 160 is not too far off that. And then I just went bang. I was like, oh, yeah. And I've tried out new hook grips as well, and they work really well. But for anyone out there, yeah, I'm fine. Thank you for asking. It's just, yeah, lifted just a little bit too much weight for what I was used to at the time. But back's good. And then, yeah, gonna start lifting again.
When was the last time you lifted, or when did you
Oh,
do
I mean, I've
this?
done some RDLs and that today, this morning. But the off days that I'm not training with the Omar is when I deadlift.
How
So
many times are you deadlifting a week?
well, it'll be two and
In
then
an RDL.
in an RDL. Yep. 2 to 3, depending on like what we're doing.
Yeah, nice. And seeing progress?
After the back injury, no. But
But
160 was,
up
yeah.
until, yeah.
Yeah, got to
What
160.
what's your PB? Have you pulled 200
180.
before?
No, I've only done
Okay.
180.
So you're getting close to top end range, and you're doing it in a calorie deficit. Sort of conflicting goals.
I like to, break the rules.
I like to break the rules. Yeah, nice. Easter plans is my next personal question.
Yeah, well, every Easter we go up the river. So we do water sports, camp out there, do some Easter egg hunts with the kiddies, and yeah, do some water sports like kneeboarding, wakeboarding, tubing, discing on a chair, all sorts. good fun.
So you're up there all Easter
Yeah,
long weekend?
we'll be up there Saturday morning, and then we'll come back Monday. The weather's looking good Saturday, Sunday, but Monday's a bit rainy, so we'll probably come back, yeah, Monday.
Early Monday.
Early-ish Monday, yeah, just pack up all the tents and then head off usually. So I love going up there Easter time. It's very wholesome. It used to, like when I was a kid, there used to be like, I don't know, 30, 40 people, and we'd just all sit around in a circle with like a massive fire going, and then just like play games and massage each other and stuff.
Yeah, nice. Nice. How long ago was this?
Oh, like my parents have been going up there for like 35 years or so, maybe even more now. But I've been going up since I was a kid.
You go up Christmas time as well, don't you? Or is it New Year's?
Just after New Year's, so usually on the 2nd to the 6th, depending on where it lies and what Elmer and I want to do as well,
Yeah.
because that's in our school holidays. So yeah, we usually go up there. It's a good time, man. It's very chill, like. Because it's on, you're just sitting on the bank and just like the boats all going past, all the speed boats. You got music, you know, people having some drinks. Not this year though. No, no drinks this year. But that's fine. So yeah, I love
So that was next question.
it.
They were the three I had for you. Drinking, how's that going?
Yeah, it's going fine, man. Like, I don't even feel like having a drink at all, which is, it's weird because sometimes when I quit alcohol, I do think about it a lot more. And that's because I'm telling people that, you know, I'm not drinking for this amount of time. And it's at the forefront of my mind a lot. Whereas this time, you know, I've told the podcast, I still haven't even mentioned it on my stories or anything. I've told people around me if they've asked, but I don't even think about it anymore. And I think like a few days ago, I think I'm up to like, it was my birthday, so the 9th of Feb. And it's nearly, yeah, so nearly, it's probably like 1.5 months
Seven
now.
weeks, 8 weeks.
Yeah, about 1.5. Yeah, about that, 8 weeks. And I don't feel like drinking one bit at all, which is great because I know how I just keep reminding myself how fucking shit I feel when I wake up when I'm hungover. And so when I'm out with Elmer and that, and she wants a wine, I'm just having like a Coke Zero or something, and it's fine. And I don't feel weird. I just put it in a glass so she doesn't feel too weird. And yeah, I just better sleep, obviously, more time for my business as well, because I'm not like losing days and feeling like shit and then feeling like, oh man, I gotta do this kind of thing. It's like no. I'm getting to do my business and making moves. And then, yeah, the alcohol just, I don't need alcohol to have fun.
No, I don't think anyone needs it to have fun.
And yeah, and I've proven that to myself many times. And for some reason now it's just been like I'll just do it, see how I go to my bucks. That's the plan usually, maybe like a week or two before. So I'm not like wrecked at the bucks. But yeah, and I don't even think about it anymore. And when there are situations that come up, because there are situations that come up, like this weekend before Easter on the Friday, we're going out and they did like a whole drinks package and stuff. I'm like, look, I'm not drinking, so can you kind of change that? So, you know, I'm not having to
Yeah.
pay for like an arm and a leg. But yeah, I just don't even think about it one bit. Like, I see there's alcohol in the house,
Yeah.
and I used to not be able to not drink it when there was alcohol in the house. And now it's just like, no, I don't even want it. Like, what, to me, what was the point of just having like one or two drinks? And Miz is like, yeah, well, you know, it relaxes me. I like feeling sophisticated when I have the wine, when I have like pasta and shit. I'm just like, okay, cool. That's like something that you've kind of made up in your head right now. And that's totally fine. You do that. But I don't need alcohol to feel that way. Like, I don't know. It's just a big illusion, I think, right now. And I mean, when you get tipsy, maybe it's a little fun here and there, but it's just a lot of negative side effects to it. And I just don't like the person I am when I'm drunk. So yeah, it's going fine.
You're starting to sound like me, man. You're starting to sound like me the way you just described that then. There's a lot of negative health effects to it, and I don't like the person I am who I'm drunk. That's what I've been saying for years. And I think what you've done there is you've correlated all the negatives, and the negatives now outweigh any positives or
It does.
pluses for you. And I think that's been the big factor. There's also something I wanted to touch on with it. The people that are most successful with refraining from things. Now, let's say it's carbs, let's say it's processed food, let's say it's soft drinks, alcohol, drugs, whatever it may be. The people that are most successful at refraining and abstaining are the people that put a time frame to it, which is another thing that you've done. You're like, yep, I've got to get through to here. So I think you've done several things where you've gone, no, I don't want it. Then you've wrapped your identity around that. It's like, I'm not someone that drinks because I don't like who I am when I drink and the negative side effects that come along with it. And then you've looked at the positives of what a bit of sobriety has brought to you, more time on the business, more clarity and thought. And then you've set the time frame. So you're like, I've just got to get through to here.
And
And
the
then I
thing,
can.
and I don't even think I'm gonna want to drink after the bucks as well. And like when we had like some alcohol free drinks as well, so it's like the whole act of just like drinking with someone, it's just like being there having a drink. It's just like, man, I like Coke Zero or a Monster or something. Like it tastes just as good. Like I do like ciders on like a good day. It just doesn't interest me as much as it used to. And that could be with age. It could be with a lot of things where everything is now shifting to if I'm drinking alcohol, I think I'm capping myself in my relationship, my personal growth, and in my business. And I don't want that. So I'm not going to say I'm never going to drink because that's not going to be like truthful to me. It's going to be very limited. Like now to the bucks. And then honestly, I think probably from the bucks to maybe, I don't think even New Year's, like maybe even to the wedding. Like, it's again, I'm not putting any hard or fast rules on it because that's not who I am. But it's just like pretty well, this is the time frame. But when you start to say like things further out, like things change as well. So you got to be careful when you're like, in 3 years, I'm gonna like not drink or whatever. It's just like, take it like, day by day, week by week, month by one month or something, and then go from there. But it is a big identity shift. And I think when we talk about changing habits, changing your body or whatever, like losing weight or gaining muscle, it does come down to the identity that you associate yourself with. So it's like if you're the person that used to get pizza every night or go out to dinner or get KFC when you come home. Like that's a identity shift that needs to change in you because you're going to feel like you're missing out on that thing now that because you can't have it. But remember, it's the way you speak to yourself around the food too. So it's like, no, you can't. It's not that you can't have it. It's like you're choosing not to have it because that's not the person that you want to become. You want to be a person that will just have it here or there. Just if you feel like some, I don't know, nuggets or I don't know what they have, bloody McFlurries, like I do sometimes. It's like shows how much I have. There's a KFC, like a Hungry Jack's, just like a minute walk from my house, pretty well. Haven't been there, so I mean, if it was KFC or McDonald's, we may have had it a little bit more. I was talking to Elmer about it, but I'm glad that it's Hungry Jack's. But yeah, it's like an identity shift that needs to change because that's why people keep going back to their old habits, is because they still associate themselves with that identity that got them into that situation. So you need to break those beliefs, you need to break those habits and break that identity that you were that person and now you are becoming a new person. That comes down to like what goal, not like now it's like define your goal and then define who you want to become when you reach that goal or reaching that goal. Like who do you want to become? Like who and what are you going to do to be that person that strives for greatness of like better health and all that kind of things? Because it's hard getting to that place with an old identity. And it's same with the drinking buddies. Like, you want to quit drinking, stop hanging around those people. You're not that they're not going to serve you, because the environment's a big one as well. And that will help you change your environment. It's easy to change your environment than to change your fucking actions sometimes as well.
Much easier. Much, much easier to change your environment than to change your actions. And changing your identity is difficult as well. I just want to clarify that for people that are listening, that actually changing who you are is difficult. It's a slow process. It will probably take quite a bit of time, and there may be some pain involved in it. Like, okay, I've lost that relationship. Okay, this has happened. It's a slower and can be at times painful process of changing who you are to become who you want to be.
You just
And that's
chip
the,
away at it, don't you?
yeah. Well, that's the whole season reason, reason season or a lifetime thing, right? So, yeah. Anyway, have you got a fact for me?
I do have a fact.
Hit me
And
with it. Hit me with it. Hit me with it.
so my fact today is about the Easter Bunny. And apparently it's a folk, folk a folk, how would you say it? Folkloric figure.
Folklore.
No, it doesn't. It says folkloric figure. So it's like folklore, but I guess they just call it folkloric figure, a folkloric figure. Anyways, believed to have originated among German Lutherans. So the bunny would judge children's behavior and deliver colored eggs to the well-behaved ones. Apparently.
There you go. I like the themed fun fact you gave us today.
I try. I try.
Yeah. mine's to do with lobsters. Now, I initially got this from
Jordan
my
Peterson.
no, my younger brother.
Okay.
And he was talking about how when lobsters fight, they pee on each other. So I was like, okay, I better fact check him.
Yeah.
I better do my due diligence. So I did. And they have got urine, sorry, they have got urine release nozzles right under their eyes. So they actually urinate in each other's faces as a way of communicating before, like, mating, fighting, etc. And they'll often fight before they mate. So turns out, yes, he was correct.
Wow.
And to double down on it, they have urine faucets or nozzles right under their eyes that excrete urine as a way of communicating before fighting, which often leads to mating.
That's crazy. That kind of reminds me
Then
of, oh, go on.
to go further down that track, I was looking at if it if it's the fighting is always before mating, but when it's same gender, so when it's male and they're fighting, the losing male will actually lose a large percentage of his brain because now he feels dominated and he's less dominant. He loses self-confidence and he grows a new subordinate brain that is more appropriate to his new lowly position in society. How wild is that?
A new identity, but lower form.
Yeah, but it, like, his brain molecules change. Like, if a dominant lobster is badly defeated, its brain basically dissolves. Then it grows a new subordinate brain, a brain that is more appropriate to his new lowly position.
What the hell? That's crazy.
So you got two fun facts for
I
the
like it.
price of one there, and it all stemmed from my brother just coming up with a little off the cuff comment, and I'm like, I'm fact checking that before I say it on the potty, and I did, and then they're the things that came up.
How good. That's a peeing out your eyes. Yeah, right.
Peeing out from just under their eyes,
And
and completely your brain dissolving and growing a new one that fits your position in society now.
that's crazy. That reminds me of when, the movie, was it Scary Movie 1 or 2? How he's just like peeing out his finger. You can see
Yeah.
now. Anyways.
Anyway, enough talk about pay. Let's get stuck into some questions.
Let's do it.
Before we get to the Q&A section of this episode, I would love for you to share the podcast with family and friends and leave us a 5-star review. It helps us to expand, get into more people's ears, and ultimately help others, which is, of course, our main mission. As always, thanks for listening. Now, let's get back to the episode. Question number one. Do you have any pet peeves when training clients?
Do I have any pet peeves when training clients? So when I used to train clients in person, the biggest pet peeve is when we would have a session booked in, and I'd even message them the night before to say, all good. They're like, yep, all good. See you tomorrow. And then they not rock up and then not call me until like later on in the day. That was probably one of my biggest pet peeves because they're not even showing up. Now, like looking back, that's like, I think that's, not cool at all, which is why I don't like it. But a lot of these other pet peeves, I think you kind of have over time, you understand where they're coming from as well. So you kind of got to be on the same page as this person of like, oh, why aren't you doing what I'm saying? Like saying you should do to achieve your results. But you have to dig deeper of like, why are they not doing it? Because it can reflect on like other areas of their life and you just might be missing something. So I think a lot of the other pet peeves that I had at the start when I first started training clients, I just didn't understand that, okay, well, maybe they're not showing up because of this reason or whatever. I'm not making a good experience for them, and or it's too early in the morning and they don't like getting up that early. Like all these little things might add to this like thing that they're doing, and they might not even realize it. And you just have to have a bit of like empathy with them as well. Of, okay, well they're in a different spot than you. They're not you. They can't train all the time like you do as well. But yeah, I think punctuality. And saying that you're going to be somewhere at a certain time or have a certain call, I think is probably one of my biggest pet peeves. I understand as well, life gets in the way. So I'm still like, it is a pet peeve, but it's also like, I just don't care anymore. It's just like, well, if you don't want to do it, then that's on you. That's not on me. I've shown up for the time. You're not there. We can't train. That's on you.
I think that stems back to what we were discussing earlier, right? And because you're the same as me in regards to when you say you're going to do something, you're going to do it, and you like being punctual and on time, we're holding people to the same standards that we hold ourselves, and that's why it was probably a pet peeve at the time, or is still a pet peeve. Now, for me, I have two pet peeves. Now, the first one is the not contacting. To be like, hey, I'm going to be 10 minutes late, or just not showing at all. Like, I find that to actually be quite disrespectful of not valuing my time. And then the second one is if I'm demonstrating an exercise and their eyes are wandering around the gym, I'm like, you're paying me to instruct and show you exercises, and then you're going and you have wandering eyes around the gym. And now I totally get that it's social aspect for some people. Like they're maybe stuck in their 9 to 5, they go to work, they clock in, clock off, and this is the one social outing they have for the day. I get that. You want to be a little bit social. But when you're paying me to do a job, and that is to take you through exercises safely so you don't get injured, and then you'd go and do something that could potentially injure you, that's when I become liable, and I don't want that to be a reflection of me because you weren't paying attention. So they're my two, is the lack of communication and not showing up to a session, or even just being like, hey, I'm going to be 15 minutes late. Like just that little bit of communication goes a long way. And you've now got Siri, you can be driving and be like, hey, I don't want to say it because it'll trigger mine. I'm going to be 15 minutes late. Bang, message is sent. Like it just that little bit of communication goes a long way, and I'm not just left in the lurch or being like, should I leave? They haven't shown. So they would be my two, communication and then completely ignoring me while I'm demonstrating how to safely perform an exercise, or maybe a little tweak to their technique and I'm trying to correct them, or and they're completely looking elsewhere in the gym.
Yeah, I've had that a lot. Not a lot, but like I've had, I can remember a few clients that I had, and you would show it to them, and then they'd get on the machine, and then be like, "I oh, so how do I use this again?" Or they just completely different handles and stuff, and then they'll be doing it, and then they're still like looking around and stuff. It's like, okay, well, obviously need to up the weight first so you can actually concentrate on it. But yeah, you gotta go to meet people where they're at, don't you? It's but it's okay on machines and stuff, But like, it's real. I think it can come down to like setting the expectations at the start as well of like, look, like if you are not here on time, like after 5 minutes, I'm going to call you. And then if you're not here within like 15 minutes, I'm going to leave or I'm going to train someone else. Like having those expectations at the front, like letting them know, like, and at least call me if you're going to be late. Like, just let me know so then I know. And yeah, and then the whole demonstration's like, watch what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Is this for
So
you?
the rule that I have is if it's 5 minutes, message, 10 minutes, call. If I get no answer and it gets to 15 minutes, leave. That's the way that I have conducted myself. And what's interesting is you're talking about setting expectations. I recently had a conversation with one of my clients about like when I'm demonstrating an exercise. All I want you to do is pay attention for that 20, 30, 40 seconds, whatever it may be. Pay close attention. As soon as I'm finished demonstrating it, you go in and perform. You perform the exercise safely, correctly. Yep, high five you. I can walk away and you can let your eyes wander around the gym as much as possible. You can go up and talk to whoever you want. At that point, my job is done because you're in the rest period. But then when you come back and you start performing the exercises again, I'm going to make sure you're switched on and you switch in. So you can clock off during your rest period, but bang, when you're doing the exercise, that's when I've got to make sure you are safe and your risk of injury is as low as possible.
Oh, I just remember this guy. She's just on the leg extension, and she's just, yeah, just like having a like good old gander around the whole fucking gym. It was funny. I just had a laugh. It was so funny.
And like, I totally get it. Like, it's some people's social out, like I said, but when I'm being paid to keep someone safe, healthy, mobile, and that them not paying attention potentially interrupts that, I don't want that to fall back on me. And then it gets out into the public of like, he injured his client. Well, what are the circumstances in which their client got injured? So,
Yeah, exactly.
all right. Question number two. What are your thoughts on following a meal plan versus tracking macros?
So the old meal plan versus tracking macros debate. So I think I'm all for tracking macros, but I think having a meal plan shows you as well, like what it would look like on a day to day, because some people are so oblivious to what an actual good meal plan looks like. So even just structuring out some meals, not so much a meal plan, but more so like what meals can you do while hitting your calorie and macro targets. So meal plans, like for a specific person, they can work, but it doesn't teach them the underlying processes of like how you got there. So if you can teach someone how to create a meal plan, so like how to create certain meals that are all your goals, certain calories, protein targets, carbohydrate targets, fat targets, all that kind of stuff, then I can see some value in having that meal plan template. But giving a specific meal plan to someone with no substitutes and not knowing the underlying reason for why you chose those kind of meals can get a bit pedantic when people are like, oh, what do I do now if I can't have this certain food? So I think knowing that you can swap foods out, which is good about tracking your macros of like, oh, I just don't have that. I'm just going to replace it with this. And it'll be fine. You have a lot more variety as well in tracking your macros because you'll be having different types of food. Unless someone has specifically made a meal plan exactly to your micronutrient needs as well, they have shown in studies that tracking your macros, you actually get more variety than you would if you actually had a proper meal plan because there might be some areas that you're missing out on and there's less food variety than when you were just tracking your macros. Also, there's a lot more let I feel like there's more less like there's less restriction when you are just tracking your macros because you can eat whatever food you want and you can incorporate everything in there. I think back in the day with the meal plans, I think some bodybuilders really enjoy it because they're like, this is my meal plan. I'm just going to stick to it. They're like tunnel vision and I can see some positive attributes to that because it's just like I just don't want to think about it. I just want to get in there. I want to train and then just eat my meal and then I'm done and then I can enjoy life because I'm at such low calories and I'm training so hard that my brain function to even worry about tracking my macros right now is just way out the window. So I can see some value in that for that type of person or a person that just doesn't want to think about it. But the thing is as well, you got to remember that you need to know the underlying reasoning for those kind of meals. So if you can make your own meal plan and stick to it, that's fine. And then know that you can substitute meals if you want to. So that's totally fine. But I think when this question comes about, it's like just a strict meal plan versus macros. I would go macros each time. But I think you can still have a flexible meal plan while incorporating tracking your macros. So I guess it's not either or, it's like you can do both.
Yeah, I'm with you on doing both, and that's the route that I was going to go down. But this is something I need to openly say is I've changed my stance on this.
Okay.
I used to very much be tracking macros and tracking macros only. I used to think meal plans were rubbish. They weren't beneficial in any way, shape, or form whatsoever. I've totally changed my stance on that. If someone can follow a meal plan, and that's an entry point to get them started, I'm all for it. Similar like I don't like group fitness classes because they're not tailored to the individual and their needs. But if that gets them a foot in the door and gets them moving, it's going to be beneficial to get them started. And then that meal plan may lead into tracking macros. Or it could be a case of, okay, I've got rigidity and structure Monday to Friday whilst working. So I'll follow a meal plan then. And then I'll track macros over the weekend so I can add some more flavorous, fun foods into my diet that makes me feel like I'm not missing out. So, my thoughts on following a meal plan versus tracking macros, you can do either or. You've got to know who you are. I prefer tracking macros just because if I was to know that I'm eating the same thing at the same time each day, each week, I'd probably, it'd probably catch up to me and I'd be like, oh, when can I have something else? So, instead of asking myself, when can I have something else? It's like, what do I want to eat? Which I think is a much better question because it can align with goals, et cetera. But yeah, that's my thoughts. Like a meal plan can be a great starting point for someone. It can also teach people the nutritional value of food. Like, and if you break down, okay, this is the amount of carbs, proteins, fats in each of those meals, then it's still an educational tool for people, which is why I always led with tracking macros because it teaches people about the nutritional value of the foods they're eating. You've just got to have more detail in your meal plan and be like, oh, I don't like broccoli. Can I replace that with green beans? Sure, you can. Just make sure the calorie content is the same between both.
Yeah. And yeah, the thing with the meal plan as well, like, you can't just grab a random meal plan off the internet and think that it's
Nah,
going
nah,
to,
nah.
it's like, and the thing with personal trainers, like, we can't give out meal plans legally, only dietitians can. So we give out meal plan templates that you can base off of to cover us if we do that. But that's why I like to say, like, grab all the foods that you enjoy and create meals from that meal, like from that, and from 300 to 700 calorie meals, and then just have 21 meals of those or whatever, and just cycle through them. When you are trying to lose weight, sometimes it is better just being simplistic with things as well. And then when you're at maintenance or maybe in a surplus, you can go as extravagant, or on the weekends when you have more time to actually cook. Because I think a lot of people, when it comes to all these like crazy meals and stuff, like, it takes time to, I mean, get the ingredients, cook it, eat it, do the dishes, and then it's like fucking 2.5 hours, it's gone, and you're like, fuck, should just meal prep.
So, what I'm finding with majority of the people that I'm working with in a nutritional sense is, let's say we'll get them tracking macros. They'll actually create a meal plan that they follow Monday to Friday, 9 times out of 10. And it may even be Monday to Thursday. And then on the Friday, they'll go out for dinner or something, or they'll change up their Friday to accommodate going out for dinner. And then the weekends are completely just done via tracking macros and it's flexible, whatever I feel like eating. So it's not an either or. I think like when people talk free weights or machines, both.
Yeah. What
You
can you
can
stick to, I guess?
you can do both. You just got to know who you are, what works with you, your structure, the way you think, your mindset, etc. So, anyway, I think we've gone in depth enough on that one.
Yeah.
Okay, question number three. When is it safe for my young children to start lifting weights?
Yeah. So I think this question comes from, why? Like, when is it safe for my young children to lift weights? Like, I think that question comes from back in the day when they thought that it would stunt growth from those plates and injury. And there was like some studies showing that, yeah, these kids that had injuries, and then it would stop them from growing because they were like hard injuries in that. But a lot of that was just because they were only looking at those kids. They weren't actually looking at the broader overall thing of all everyone doing it. It's just that they were only looking at the ones that got injured. So this has now been debunked, and it's as long as they can basically lift the weight. So you've got strength that going through puberty, you actually, the younger you start, the more weight you can actually handle that they're now finding, but they're not finding muscle mass as much. I think you have to wait until after puberty. So I think doing sports, and then if your children want to start lifting weights, then you would start with some body weight stuff, and then you would just gradually increase the weight, like just not be stupid about it. Because a lot of the conclusions from those studies were they weren't supervised, and they were doing weights that were way too much for them. And you wonder why that they got injured. So no, it won't stunt the growth, and your young children can start lifting to build more muscle or just get stronger, really, when they f not feel like it, but like when they're ready.
Yeah, I think to give a slightly different answer, I think take them through body weight first, and when they can control and maneuver their body through space safely and efficiently, then you can look to add load to that. But they've got to be able to have a good understanding of how to maneuver and manipulate their body beforehand. So maybe take them to like a gymnastics or something and get them to be able to really understand how to maneuver their body and move it through space safely. And then, yeah, they can pretty much start whenever, because it's been proven that it doesn't stunt the growth plates. So you can start whenever. But I would make sure that's on them. Like, it's not you driving the pushing of the lifting weights. It's like they're actually asking, coming to you, seeking it out. And it's got to be done with correct technique, form, etc., biomechanics. So yeah, pretty much whenever, but make sure that they're able to move their body through space efficiently first, efficiently and safely first. Like, you can achieve a lot: pull-ups, dips, lunges,
Oh, yeah.
jumping, etc. So that's where I'd probably lean towards before moving them into actually lifting weights. And then, I don't know, suppose if they can do that safely and they come to you and be like, "Hey, I want to start pumping iron," then yeah, introduce it to them, and make sure it's introduced them in a healthy way that is safe, I suppose. But
Yeah,
that's the route I would go down. That's I've thought about, like, children in the future and what I'd like to do, and gymnastics is definitely the route I'd go down for that ability to be able to move their body and get that body awareness and understanding. Okay, question number four: how important is knowing your BMI?
The importance of knowing your BMI doesn't matter too much if you're lifting weights a lot as well. So BMI is basically goes by, I think it's like weight divided by height squared or something, and that just works out a number, and they've got a number of a healthy range. I think it's, what is it? I should have the numbers. It was like between, oh, 18 and 25 or something like that. And
18
then,
and 25, I
yeah,
believe.
and above that would be 25 to 30 is like overweight, and then you've got the obese categories after that. So on a population level, when they're looking at a broad range of people, like millions of people, BMI tracks quite well with health aspects of like knowing populations of like if they're obese or not, with all that kind of stuff. But when you go down to the root level of just like an individual into an actual doctor's office, it doesn't always translate to, your BMI of 31, you need to lose weight before I kind of talk to you. You might have these risks of these certain diseases. So obviously the higher the BMI, well, not obviously, but they say the higher the BMI, the more risk you are of certain diseases of cardiovascular disease and all that kind of stuff. So it is good to be in a lower bracket, but if you do lift weights, it doesn't account for muscle mass. So just be careful that just because you're a high number, you may think, you may say obese and be like, oh, no, I'm fit, I'm lean, I'm like lifting weights, like that can't be right. Don't get too worried about that. Now, you can be obese and have no metabolic, nothing metabolically wrong with you. There are some instances of that low, but there are, but that doesn't mean that later on in life that you might not get them. So just be mindful of that. And then same with like having normal BMI, people do still have metabolic, issues. So it's good to obviously get tested, and do the healthy acts that we speak about a lot of, getting good sleep, making sure you're exercising every day, not being so sedentary, eating healthy whole foods, and having good relationships, not drinking too much, not having smokes, the big basics.
Yeah, well, for me, knowing your BMI, fairly irrelevant. I haven't known my BMI at any point unless somebody's been like, "What's your BMI?" And then I've had to do a quick Google check and find out. To me, it's, but I'm a health conscious individual. I'm someone that trains, lift weights, etc. If there was a BMI that could be done with a waist measurement, and then somehow that was part of the calculations, was a waist circumference, then it might actually hold some value. But until that happens, it's body weight, which doesn't take into account glycogen in the muscle, size of the muscle, fluid, all these things, by your height. Yeah, I'd put it in the same category as body fat percentage. Fairly irrelevant. Never discuss BMI with anyone that I work with. But there, it's a doctor's term, right? It's often used in doctors, and they use it because a higher BMI has been shown to have negative health effects, like you mentioned, cardiovascular disease, risk of stroke, risk of certain cancers, etc., all go up. But for me, knowing my BMI, it's not something I know. I'd probably be in the overweight category, which I highly doubt I'm overweight. Yeah, it's got its flaws. But if it was done with a waist measurement, there could be some value to it.
Yeah, like I think there is a calculator that they use in the army, and it does do waist, and if you're female, it does waist and hip and also neck, and then it gives you a category from that. So if, the doctors can do that, that would be great.
Yeah, well, I think that's important because you could have broad shoulders, you'd have big, thick, muscular legs. And a smaller waist circumference and weigh 100 kilos, and pretty much anyone over 100 kilos is going to put in that overweight or obese category. So, yeah, I think the waist measurement is actually rather important, but it's neglected in the medical industry.
Sure is.
All right, that's a wrap for today's episode. If you want your questions answered in the future, make sure you are following us at brain.body.movement, at Brad Dapper, and at Brock underscore Douglish. And you can ask us a question whenever we put up a sticker box or shoot us a DM. Now, we just want to say thank you so much for listening to us. If you got any value from this episode, we would really appreciate it if you shared it to your Instagram stories. And don't forget to tag us so we can say thanks. We would also appreciate it if you shared it with family and friends and left us a 5-star review. But before we go, we can leave you with a few things. Make your damn bed, get your steps in, and be kind to one another.
Cheers.
Think the waist measurement is actually rather important, but it's neglected in the medical industry.
Sure is.
Don't get me started on the medical industry, mate.